Well, thanks everybody for coming out, and thank you, Pat, for that introduction. So what I'm going to be presenting today is a talk on weed control and grain crops, and I'm specifically going to be focusing on lentil. Some of you may not know lentil as a crop, but we'll start off by looking at it there. In case you're wondering, it's the crop on the right-hand side of the screen. That is lentils. They grow about a foot and a half tall. They're a small grain crop, and they are probably the least competitive grain crop that we grow on the prairies. They're, well, maybe flax is close to it, but I think lentils is even less competitive because they're quite short. The canopy closure occurs, it doesn't occur quickly in them, and they're a very difficult crop to control weeds in. In fact, my research in this first started about a dozen years ago, and I was actually the only time this ever happened in my life. I was approached and said, "Well, we'd like a proposal on weed control, organic weed control in lentil." And I kind of went laughed at them and said, "Yeah, good luck. It's not going to work. It's not possible because I didn't think they were competitive." But I thought, "Well, you're not going to walk away from money." So I took the money and started to work on it, we did it. One of the things we did a bit later is we calculated the critical period of weed control, and we know that unlike a lot of our crops on the prairies, that there is a critical period of weed control in lentil, that you do have to control the weeds for not just your one-time weed control, like maybe in canola or wheat, where it's just one specific time, the critical period kind of condenses just to one time. The lentils do have a period basically till canopy closure where they have. I should also mention they are economically important crop in Saskatchewan, maybe not organic lentils, but conventional lentils. 2 years ago, the value of exports in Saskatchewan exceeded that of canola, and we're like, I think, in the $2 to $3 billion realm. So anyways, the first thing we did with lentils when we started to do this, when I took the money, was look at the lentil seeding rate. And here you can see on this diagram here is a seeding rate with viable seeds per meter squared and biomass with weed biomass here and crop biomass here. Well, it turns out that the recommended seeding rate for lentils was, when we grew lentils, and this was averaged over 4 site years on organic farms, was essentially if we grew them the recommended seeding rate, we were growing about half weeds and half lentils. But if we increased the seeding rate, and this isn't rocket science, we were able to get more plants in there and suppress our weed biomass, which gave us a higher biomass and a higher yield, as we can see over here, as we increased that. And we did the economic analysis on it. It was more than economic for the farmers. So as a result, for organic conditions, we recommend a much higher seeding rate, at least double that. One of the reasons if you were to look at that, that's what our lentils looked like kind of part way through the season, and then by the end of the season, while still weedy, there's the plot here. I have an outline, but you can see we're getting a pretty fair crop of lentils in there. And although our yields may not look great at around 1,000 kilos per hectare, you can routinely get about a dollar a pound for organic lentils. So, if you get in a gross returns of $1,000 an acre, that's enough to... that's quite good by any standards. One of the reasons we were able to do this, in addition to increasing the seeding rate, is that we also use mechanical weed control. In the case of that previous study, we were using harrowing. We used a tine harrow, an Einbach tine harrow. There's other manufacturers out there. That worked well for us. We were getting reasonable weed control. But one thing we do recognize that with weed control of the mechanical with a harrow is that the plants aren't perfectly tolerated to here. Here you can see the percentage of burial. This is in field P, and lentils are even more sensitive, that you get to past about 60% burial, and you see this drop in yield as you have. So on the plus side, you're burying and pulling out weeds with your implement, but you're also burying and pulling out your crop, which is a negative. So the selectivity is rather poor. Because of that and other reasons, the second reason with the in-crop harrows is if you're maintaining any residue cover on the surface, you're essentially pulling a giant rake through the stubble, which which plugs it and renders it useless. So you can't use it within a reduced tillage system. to deal with this, and while I should mention my colleague Eric Johnson, who's a co-author on this, he's done a lot of this work, but he started working with Mintil rotary hose. When I first saw one of these, I thought, this isn't going to do anything. It's just a bunch of tines that whirl around and throw some soil around. How can that ever give any weed control? Surprisingly, it can if you have perfect timing. And that's the key thing with a Mintil rotary hose. Your timing has to be perfect. The great thing that I mentioned about it is that the crop residue stays on the soil surface. It kind of flicks it up. It doesn't plug. And the lentils exhibited very good tolerance today. I won't show you the graph of the tolerance, but there's essentially, you know, even, I think if you got up to about 6 or 7 passes, it started to reduce the yield a bit, but the tolerance was quite good. Another method that we started to look at over time was steerable methods for inter-row cultivator, whether they're a commercial system like this Garford here that has a camera and has a system that automatically slides the toolbar back and forth to keep within the rows there. But essentially, this is kind of like you would use in a corn or soybean wide row rotation, but these will go down to, and we use them on a 12-inch, 30-centimeter row, but there are farmers out there that use them on 7 or 8-inch row spacings as well. So they can get quite precise. So we start to investigate this. We did this with Catherine Stanley, a graduate student of mine. We used a smaller version of this. You can barely see it there. There's a steering wheel actually on the cultivator. So we didn't have enough money for the camera version, so we just adopted the graduate student walk behind and steer the cultivator as it goes through method, which was, they're going to be there being a graduate student anyways. They might as well do that. And so that worked out quite well. The first thing we did with that was to look at the tolerance of the crop to it. And here, I think this is in pea, but we also did it in lentil. And we can see as we delayed the cultivation, we did get some reduction in yield. This is just a tolerance experiment. We weren't looking at weed control. But if we were within that critical period of weed control, it wasn't affecting our yield potential too much, especially if we got it at the beginning of the critical period of weed control, that it seemed to be quite effective. Well, that was all fine, but the question I'd always get up from an extension level, I'd go out and farmers would say, yeah, so you're doing all this one, but which one is best? You know, kind of like little kids, you know, what would, you know, if a great white shark and a crocodile were to have a battle, which one would win? You know, kind of, this is maybe a bit more logical, but they would ask which one's best. Well, part of the thing you have to realize is the timing of these machines is that, especially the rotary hoe, you have to get that very early. It'll only control weeds when they're germinating or in the white thread stage. Luckily, tolerance is quite good. It's just useless. If something's even in a large cotyledon stage, it won't normally take it out. Harrows will control larger weeds, but crop tolerance is an issue, and we should have actually pulled these arrows over here, because often you have to wait till your crop's slightly bigger in order to have reasonable tolerance for that. The inter-row cultivation, the one issue with there is you actually have to be able to see where the rows are, either with the camera or the person, before you can cultivate. But it can get big weeds, but not within the row. And so we started an experiment looking at those three treatments, rotary hoe, harrow, inter-row cultivation, and we also varied our seeding rate as well between the regular and the high seeding rate to see what would happen. That's what I'll present here. And first we'll just show some videos that my students, this I should mention, this is the master's project of a master's student of mine, Alexander Alba, who's just been the most wonderful graduate student in the world. And so here's the harrow. Obviously, we're going through peas there, but you can see there's issues with tolerance because you're whacking the plant. You can see it's uprooting some. You can see some catching on the tines. You'll probably see that better overlooking. You can see up here, you can see some, you've uprooted some. And you can see the peas are getting beat up a fair bit. That's that tolerance issue that we're always concerned about with harrowing. The rotary hoe, it's hard. We don't have any showing the weeds being flicked out as well, but you're just going small weeds. You know, you're going at a fast speed, but you have to get those weeds when they're small, either just emerging in that white thread stage or when they're already up. Finally, the inter-row tillage. I'm going to show a video here. Obviously, you know, there's issues with a tillage blight if it's off a bit, but as you can see in this video, it clearly illustrates it'll kick out the weeds where it goes quite well, but you end up with weeds still in the seed row, right? And those ones are closest to the plants, to the crop plants directly competing with them. Which way would be better? So this is essentially what we have, and kind of a little illustration of what it looks like. Of course, rotary hoeing done early, this is kind of the stage. Harrowing, that'd be the optimum stage for harrowing. Inter-row tillage. Inter-row tillage is the one that really makes you feel good, because you always see this black stuff after. But how do these work? So in terms of just visually of how they look, this one's kind of focusing on the rotary hoe, and I'll cut to the chase a little bit. The rotary hoe often worked quite well. We were quite astounded in this trial. In 3 out of the 4 site years, we had what I would term excellent weed control. This is comparing, you know, untreated versus rotary hoe, followed by inter-row tillage. I should also mention that within this, we did this as a systems trial. We didn't try to always mimic the exact way we use the tool every location every year. We would take how would a farmer use it at that location. So it was kind of a systems way of thinking that way. And here's the three together. The problems when we did had the harrowing to the mix, we tended to hurt the crop a lot more with the harrowing. If you want to see our results, not surprisingly, we had shown this before, seeding rate had an effect, and this is in lentils. So we had in weed biomass, we reduced the weed biomass by not astounding 16% weed biomass. But in terms of our mechanical weed control tools, this is our untreated control here. This is the average of 4 site years under organic conditions. These are our single treatments here, rotary hoe, the weed biomass, harrowing, and inter-row tillage. We have a little bit of overlap with our mean separation, but our inter-row tillage had higher weed biomass than our rotary hoe, and harrowing was kind of in between. When we combined methods, we saw a drop. You know, we had our two rotary hoe followed by harrowing followed by inter-row, and rotary hoe followed by inter-row tillage. These ones don't separate out in terms of mean separation, but when I'm out talking to farmers, they don't care about that. They look at the lowest one, and realistically, this was the one treatment you could always pick out at each location without a plot map. The early rotary hoe followed by inter-row tillage. When we went to our three-way, we actually had, it wasn't significantly different, but a reduction in weed biomass. But as we'll see when we get to the yield, it was there. So our best treatments had about a 76% decrease in weed biomass, which I'm very happy about. You know, sometimes with herbicides, you only get about 80% control. So, and you know, and we're actually using some of these techniques for conventional lentil production, because the state of group 2 herbicide resistance in lentil is so bad that farmers are starting to look at different methods, and these are some of the methods that they're looking at. In terms of our yield, the increase in the seeding rate increased our seed yield by 30%. And in terms of our mechanical weed control, again, harrowing had a lower yield than our rotary hoe and inter-row tillage. And although it doesn't always separate out, well, in terms of the rotary hoe and the harrow and the rotary hoe inter-row tillage aren't significantly different, but it did end up the numerically highest one here, and it was kind of consistently the lowest biomass and the highest there, and the highest seed yield, so that gave us there. As I mentioned before, using the three methods just was too hard on the crop, and our tolerance fell. So, and there's our hand-weeded control, so you can see we weren't far off of our hand-weeded control in terms of yield potential. As I said, this is very gratifying. You know, we're adding on a lot of value in terms of lentil yield production. Did this happen at every site year? No. We had one site year that I won't show you the data, but where there was terrible weeds, and we actually had weeds that came after our last inter-row tillage, and they came quite badly. We still have a significant effect of the mechanical weed control, but our yields were very low at that one location, 400 pounds maximum per acre, which isn't a complete write-off, but we had other sites where we had like 2,500 pounds of lentil per acre. So as normal organic research, highly variable. So our conclusions here, again, seeing kind of the extreme differences you could see, and you can look through the blocks there. One of the things I should mention is that the graduate student I had doing this, Alexander Alba, was obsessive about this project. He would be out there every day checking the stage of weeds. And that's, if you're going to make especially roadie hoeing work, that's how obsessive you have to be. If you leave it for a few days, you know, you're only in the right stage a day or two at most. And you're either going to, and if you leave it too long, if you can see the weeds there with big cotyledons, you might as well just go drive up and down the road. It's not going to do any good at all. So the overall thing is all in-crop mechanical weed control methods reduce the weed biomass, normally resulted in higher yield. The most consistent treatment, rotary hoe followed by inter-row tillage. Seeding rate was also effective. And we're getting, you know, if we combine these treatments, if we look at the higher seeding rate and the, like our best treatments, we're getting an increase in seed yield by about 70% and weed control of about 80%. But the big but, you know, I was talking to Perry Miller about this. Steve, do you have anything that works on Canada thistle? I'm like, other than tilling it again and again and again and again and then repeating that another year, no. These don't work on perennial weeds at all. These are on annual weeds. These are the community that's been selected in our organic locations. They've been long-term organic, at least 10 years. And I talked about the one site there. In terms of these are the people that paid for it. Again, like Alexander Alba, he's not here. He's going to another conference shortly. He's presenting this at the Weed Science Society of America conferences this year. That's our funders and a lot of people working on this. And I think I haven't even seen Pat do anything, so I must have finished well under time. Okay, I think we have time for questions then. I see one up front here.
So, Steve, what is it like in Canada as far as the feeling of the conventional farmers about tillage? Because in Iowa, you share this with state taxes and
Oh, I do. And when I show it to conventional farmers, they go, oh, you know, like, we're no-till, and, you know, I got the tattoo, you know. So, the good thing about the rotary hoe is, you know, is if you had to buy one thing here, the rotary hoe. But the trouble is the rotary hoe, if it rains during your period when you had to use it, you wouldn't have been able to use it too. So you almost need a backup plan as well. So one thing I would say about the rotary hoe is you can be a zero-till or a min-till farmer and still use it. You know, the other ones, yeah, I know you're digging up dirt and unfortunately organic, you know, how, like, you know, I did some work, Pat's done some work on kind of reduced till organic, but it's really hard. Like, you know, the thistles just come in there and, yeah. Yeah.
How about the rotary hoe and inter-row tillage? They were at two different times, right?
Yeah, there were two different times, yeah.
How much of that is it doing that mechanical disturbance twice, two times, and how much is it the actual measurement of the rotary hoe?
I see you.
If you had questions.
Okay. Yeah, well, I guess part of, yeah, so the question was how much of it is that we're just doing more by doing the sequential treatments, we're doing more operations. And I guess that is a point, but the issue is that some of these, like the rotary hoe, you could go out there and rotary hoe it later, but it's not going to do anything. It is that very distinct timing, then you can use it. The inter-row tillage, you can't use it early, really early, because you can't actually see where the rows are. And if you do, you'll cover up, even if you do, you'll cover up your plants. So every one of them has kind of their little niche, you know, you can think of it almost that they fit in. And so, yeah, and so, you know, if I was a big organic farmer, if I had 5,000 acres of organic land, I'd buy all three because there's years, like seriously, and it isn't, they're not that expensive and you know, the younger organic farmers aren't as scared to capitalize from what my experience, they're not, there was an older generation that was, you know, still trying to do what grandpa was doing. The younger ones seem to be not much more competitive that way. Yes? Oh, that's a Garford, and there's a couple of companies that make them. It was actually, what was the name of the cultivator? So, yeah, the Garford.
What's the width of some of that equipment? Is it a 12 foot?
No, a rotary hose, they can, I think they're made, actually with the width of the size of them is, they're all available in commercial sizes. The Garfords will go, I think the Garfords are up to about 50 feet wide, 45, 50 feet wide. I think they'll build them almost as wide as you want them. And actually, if you get them wider, it reduces your, because it only needs one guidance system as long as you're on the same pattern of doing that, of doing it. And all the other ones are available wide. I see Pat up here.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks very much, Steve.